Call to order the council meeting for June the 27th, 2016. And just a bit of housekeeping, if anyone has any electronic devices, we would appreciate it if you would turn them off during the meeting as they affect our sound system. Okay. Call for a moment of silence, please. Stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Okay, if we could have roll call, please.
Charlie Hawkins.
Here.
Dennis Olison.
Here.
Bonnie Onion.
Here.
Harry Robinson.
Here.
Steve Lawrenson.
Here.
Mary Lou Stewart.
Here.
Paul Greeno.
Here. Next item on the agenda is audience participation. We have a number of people that have signed up that wish to speak this evening. First of all, Trevor Hoskins. Trevor, would you be kind enough to come forward and state your name and address?
Trevor, before you start, I just want, for everyone's benefit, if you're speaking at a public hearing matter tonight, this is not the time. If it's regarding the Vista Terrace, that public comment portion was 4 weeks ago. Anyone speaking in the open session on Vista Terrace, that information will not be considered by the council in making a decision tonight. So I just want to put that out there before the open session.
But Trevor, you have an option if you wish to wait to speak on the transportation, which is coming up under one of our council items. If you wait, you should hold your remarks till that time.
I think I might as well do it now, Mr. Mayor.
Please feel free.
My name is Trevor Hoskins, and I live at 8686 Great Ordall Lane in Blaine. Mr. Mayor, council members, about 1 year ago, you may recall, I came to a council meeting and requested repairs be made to the pathway that is alongside Semiahmoo Parkway and Drayton Harbor Road. At that meeting, Mr. Mayor, you suggested I should come back when you were considering budgets for projects like this. So here I am. Well, this pathway is not included in your six-year transportation improvement program. I am, once again, asking that the path be repaired. Following my request last year, Bill Bullock did inspect portions of the pathway with me, and I feel sure he will confirm that repairs are necessary. We presently have senior citizens and others walking on the side of the road because they are concerned about falling on the pathway because of holes and tree roots. I am concerned that walking in the road will result in a tragic accident, and I know that none of us want this to happen. About halfway along this path on Semiahmoo Parkway side, there's an iron bridge which desperately needs cleaning and repainting, and there are several wooden posts missing whose purpose is to prevent someone driving on the pathway. The pathway is known as the Millennial Pathway, and it is now almost 20 years since it was created. It's done very well in that time without, to my knowledge, any maintenance. So I do ask that you consider this. While I'm here, I would like to thank the Public Works Director, whose staff have kept the sides of these roads mowed again this year. I recognize it takes a great deal of patience on the part of her employees to do this properly, and their efforts are really appreciated. After all, this is the main road down to the Inn on the Spit, and it is to the benefit of all of us that visitors get the correct impression when they drive this road. Regularly mowing the grass on the sides certainly helps provide this. Thank you very much, Raven. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and thank you considering my request.
Thank you, sir. Now, Gene Cartwright? Gene, again, we have a council action item, and we have a public hearing on the 6-year transportation improvement plan. You're welcome to wait and speak during that public hearing, or if you wish to speak now, you can go ahead.
Thank you. I'll speak now. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak on a subject that's very close to my heart. About 3 years ago, I broke an ankle at home and shattered it in about 5 places. It took much longer than I thought that it should to get well, but then I have to take into consideration my age. One of the recommendations of the physician was to walk as soon as I was able and get exercise as much as I could. The pathway is very convenient for me, and it was a nice walk that I could gradually increase the amount of steps that I took each day. I have noticed that over time, this path has become uneven, rutted, cracks in it, and I would certainly like to suggest that it be repaired, refinished, or whatever needs to be done to make it safe again. One of the things after I healed was I said, I'm never going to do this again. And so I hang on to guardrails and I walk carefully, but the path is not safe. And I just wanted to make sure that I presented that to you as an important factor for all of us, particularly those of us in Semiyama who use this path a lot. Thank you for your time.
Excuse me, Mayor. Did Jean. You state your name for the record?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Name and address for your record, please.
Gene Cartwright. My address is 8950 Bald Eagle Drive, and that's plain.
Thank you, Gene.
Thank you.
John Binns? John. Thank you, John. And Richard Thatcher? Okay.
The issue we have, a number of us in our neighborhood have, we live on Dodd Avenue, which is over in that area. Mr. Jones described it last week as west of the railroad tracks over there, Montford Park, that area. We have concern about emergency exit from the neighborhood. Some years back, the fire department, I think they created a little effort. There's kind of a path that goes from the field at the end of our road. That is, it gets overgrown, it's rutted. Maybe a fire truck could get through there. None of the rest of us could. Now, you may say, what are the odds? Well, they did a little number pushing with that. There's probably about a 4% chance that in any given emergency, you would run into up to a 10-minute delay. In particular, this is because of the trains going southbound. This doesn't require an oil spill or somebody going off the tracks or anything else. And we all know who live in the neighborhood that does occur. Just the train going southbound, because of the screening that occurs down there, they take, and I've timed this 3 times now, they take 10 minutes to get past. What's 10 minutes? Well, going to work, you should have left earlier, okay. But in an emergent situation, a fire perhaps, God forbid, and we haven't had one of those recently, or a heart attack, or whatever. You know, my sister took an overdose of meds accidentally. We had to get her out quickly. Emergent situations, a matter of minutes, is a big deal. So I guess all I'm asking is that, and I don't know who does this in the town, it was made clear to us it wasn't Mr. Jones, did it? Somebody needs to make sure that roadway, A, is maintained better. It's not really a roadway. B, I'd like to see it ensured that whatever happens with that property, that there needs to be egress, both for emergency workers to get in and also for residents to get out. You know, it is possible to have a fairly significant disaster along those tracks. You know, I don't know how many of you saw the oil train parked down there this morning.
No question.
It doesn't even have to be an oil train, okay? It just takes one of these 10-minute trains to happen at the wrong time, and then maybe get stuck for 15. You know, if you're working with about a, my estimate is that means that for roughly 4 to 5% of the day, every day, those tracks are blocked for 10-minute intervals. That means there's a 4% chance in any one single emergency that it's going to run into that blockage. You run the numbers, that says that by the time we've had 15 to 20 emergencies, I don't know how long that takes. I'm not an emergency guy. I'm a math guy, though. By the time we've had 15 to 20 emergencies, it is more likely than not that one of those emergencies will have had to wait more than 2 to 3 minutes.
Could you sort of describe it again for me? I'm not sure.
Which part of it, the math or the situation?
Well, the math.
Okay. Sort of. If we assume they're independent and random events, they occur roughly 6 to 8 times a day. I said 7. Just the southbound trains. Forget all the others. They're reasonably quick. That means you've got 70 minutes of blockage a day.
Right.
Out of 1440, that's about 5%. Knock a little bit of that off because you say 1 to 2 minutes doesn't matter. But then you add some more back in because of the breakdowns, and you stick around 5%. When you apply that, and you take that means there's a 95% chance they don't. By the time you have 95 taken to the 16th or 17th power, you're at less than 50%. I apologize to the rest of you who weren't interested.
Michael, do you know specifically where this roadway or?
I do, and Raven can actually probably speak to it more directly in regards to our rights of access and maintenance and that sort of thing. But it's the neighborhood, or it's the missing link between the Rungi Avenue, Rungi neighborhood, yep, and the Dodge Street neighborhood. It's the way that you would get through from Dodge Street down to the True Value Hardware if the road were completed. It is planned for construction in our comprehensive plan, which we are adopting tonight, and it is also has in the past been part of a development plan for that neighborhood, but that development never was constructed as a result of the recession. So it likely will come through the natural course of development, but at this time, other than the emergency access corridor that's there, there isn't a road through.
Well, I'm going to apologize then, because if it's in that plan, I didn't recognize it, so I should have waited.
No, that's totally
that's
fine.
Good. I just wanted to explain it. Thank you for bringing it up.
Eventually, like I say, Raven can speak more directly.
Well, the longer we wait, the math is real. And again, I don't know how long it will take to get. It could be next week. It could be anything. You know, we don't have to get to 15 or 20. It's a real possibility. I just don't want to see that happen to anybody's family member, and I know you all don't either. So I thank you for your time.
Appreciate your comments, Richard. Is there anyone else that would like to speak to you and address the council this evening? Okay. The next item on our agenda, then, will be written communications.
We received a number of emails the night that we had the public hearing on the fireworks, but it was after the close of the public hearing. We also received an email from Eugene Klein regarding accessing documents on the city website, an email dated June 19th from Mike Passlip regarding crime statistics, and a letter dated June 24th from John Benz, Jr. regarding Simiamu Path repairs.
Thank you. Okay, the next item will be the consent agenda. We have approval of bills in the amount of $367,096.31, approval of council minutes for June the 13th, 2016, approval of the council study session minutes for June the 20th, 2016. Be willing to entertain a motion.
I so move.
Motion has been made and seconded. Are there any comments or questions?
Just a question, Harry.
Here's a question, Dennis.
There's a number of items that relate to the Peace Arch Festival.
Jeff, would
that's
you like?
The Tourism Advisory Committee grant reimbursement.
Any further questions or comments? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. Hearing none, the motion is carried 7-0. Next item on our agenda will be public hearings. We have 3 this evening. Anyone wishing to speak on any issue will be allowed 5 minutes. Additional non-repetitive testimony will be allowed after all testimonies have been heard. And John, you might like to speak regarding the ULID.
Excuse me. And we are with the ULID, Vista Terrace ULID, that will be coming forward. The public opportunity to comment has been ended. This public hearing was left open for the staff response to the public comments, and that's what's coming now. I just remind staff and council that we have a court reporter here who is going to be transcribing your comments, and so please speak slowly. And Raven, since you're not in line of sight, just remember that, please.
Would you prefer me to?
No, I think you're fine. I think I may just, if you get a break sign from me, that's what it means.
Well, I was planning on ignoring you for the rest of the staff report. So I turn the mic this way partially because I had neck surgery a week ago and I'm trying not to do big whiplash maneuvers, but also because while the staff report is for the council, it is also for the public in terms of the response. So this staff report includes various items. What I thought I would do would be to walk through those. It is not my intent to read the staff report today. There are extra copies, as I understand it, available for people who would like to read through the details. And there is a copy as well in the council packet. So, as I stated, the staff report includes various things. Ordinance we will actually touch on later tonight. But starting off, we just have a little bit of history of the plat of Vista Terrace itself. Then we want a little bit of background about the project. You've already heard a lot of this before, so I'm not going to detail this now. One of the comments that came up, and there's been other discussions around, you know, was the city responsible with these funds? And so one of the things I highlighted here was our construction costs and how each phase of the project came in under the contractor's bid. So while the bid contractor bid amount was something unpredictable with the economy kind of coming back, the actual management of the project and the management of the construction was done in a very cost-effective way. We talked a little bit about the public process, what process was required by RCW that we followed, and the remaining public process that was above and beyond what's required from RCW. So that's we've detailed there. And then I got into project costs. I have some graphs here. I thought you might like a little break from the text. The graph shows the original project estimate. Next to it, we called it original with fees, and I'll detail what this is a little bit later. But essentially, our finance director, with help from Mr. Bullock, went through and using 2012, essentially using 2012 rates from other projects, used the quantities was actually constructed and came up with costs. And then our finance director populated that with what the bonding cost would be. So that is what this original with fees means. And we broke that out by share per lot, annual amount, and then equivalent monthly amount. There was also a lot of public commentary and question and so forth on general facility fees. So I went through a little bit on what general facility fee is per the Blaine Municipal Code and how it talks about how it is charged on all new and expanded service connections. Pursuant to our unified fee schedule. So even though these fees don't directly relate to the assessment, the topic I felt was important enough to detail to you, as was the quote, if you look in the middle of the page, it has been stated many times, the city has changed the rules by re-implementing the GFF. And in here, I quoted from the 2011 meeting on Ordinance 112786, which formed the Vista Terrace, about whether those fees could be waived or paid ahead. And the answer at that time, as well as every other step of the process, has been no, we cannot do that. and it would be essentially illegal for us to do that, in fact. I move on to actually just highlighted the cost of the assessment role. This was provided to you at the last meeting, and so you should have that information, but we kind of showed how it broke out as well as how the H Street construction was kind of on the side, not incorporated in to the total. But one thing to highlight, and it was also several comments on the H Street project, those properties are part of the assessments. Even though those costs aren't, the properties are. And that's because the construction of those improvements happened after the ULID was formed. We go on to talk a little bit about the final assessment role public hearing, the last hearing and the testimony that was heard. We did receive a lot of comments. I am not going to detail, like I mentioned, every comment and its response, but we tried to group those responses by what we felt pertained directly to the assessment. And so those are listed here initially. And then there are further comments later in the document that where we felt, as staff, they did not relate directly to the assessment. However, if council would like us to bring forward any of those questions or would like to discuss any of those responses, we can do so. But I'm just going to continue to move forward through the staff report. And would it help for me to detail which questions were responded to? Or is that, are you following me along pretty well here? Looking like we're doing okay?
No, they're in the record. They're in the record as part of the staff report. I think the responses begin, I don't have a page number on mine, but they begin within the staff report right after the summary of citizens' table comments.
Well, what I'll do is I'll go ahead and just detail the subject, not the response, because we did group like comments together. So one comment being on sewer did not increase the property value. GFS should be included with you at the cost amount to determine the increase in value. So that actually talks a little bit to what the section on GFF, total details. And we have quite a detailed response in the report as well as a advisory statement of value from Valbridge, who is a property advisor that specializes in ULIDs. And based on the discussion of his comparables that he looked at, and then he came up to Blaine and looked at the project, he said it's probable the subject would reflect individual parcel special benefits within the $15,000 to $25,000 per parcel range. And then he details why it is similar to which projects he compared to. So this also talked, the next comment was about the cost increase in the project, how the GFF and where that is applied. Again, that is responded to fairly detailed in both a little bit in question two, but as well with the earlier commentary on GFFs. Comment on the cost of administration, are we paying for it twice? And the cost of administration that's referred to in the detailed cost for the assessment is future cost administration, not the current administration that has been managing the project, but who's going to be managing the administration over the next 20 years of the loan. That's something that we contract out. And that's also explained in a little further detail. Electrical costs should be broken out, should not have to pay for the labor to install conduit. Absolutely, totally agree. And those costs were a separate pay item and are not included in the assessment total. I already mentioned the city changed the rule, the reasoning behind the change in the GFF and how that was applied, but also the response details how the grant money was pursued because of that. And if the GFF were not reinstated, there would be no grant money because that's what the grant money was for. Next item was $135,000 in forgiving H Street costs mean that those property owners didn't pay? I mentioned that already, that that is not the case. We are not treating those property owners differently. We had a comment about the legality, no pre-improvement appraisal and so forth. Those items are not required by law, and so there is a better response in the packet regarding that. We had a property owner that had a miscommunication about his personal situation with his home when it was purchased, and we responded, even though that is somewhat pertaining to the assessment, it really is a misunderstanding between this property owner and his realtor at the time, but we did respond to that. Whether or not, saying we had plenty of time to get this completed, we delayed to get the GFF revenue, and we added that after forming the LID. That question is best responded to with the detail of what this would have been in 2012 costs with the traditional bond financing, and looking at the graphs of how that specifically affects this project. Council Health had hookup. Again, we have a statement of opinion from an appraiser about valuation, so hopefully that'll help that property owner. Again, this is very specific to a property, but that they received no benefit from the project and they were connected before the LID and therefore not part of the LID. There's a couple of property owners that were connected with the H Street project. Those people are part of the ULID. Cost is higher than the estimate. All GFF revenue should go toward repayment, and that we should have revisited the project or exempted when we reimposed the GFF. So, again, the GFF section in the staff report relates to the reasons why that is not something that the council could do, and the previous responses also address the cost issue. Requesting the city council reduce the assessment amount, that is certainly something that is in the council's prerogatory to do. We talk about how that might set a precedent with future ULADs as well as have an impact to the sewer fund reserve. So we encourage you to read the response to that. And how much did construction costs rise in the chasing of grant funds? And that also is responded to within the text of the document, most specifically the information from our finance director as well as the graphs that help show those three things side by side, the original estimate, the 2012 with the actual quantities and so forth, and the bonding costs as well as looking at it side by side with the actual costs. So, later in the record, we have Exhibit C, which are again, we felt that these comments did not pertain directly to the ULID, but to the extent that council would like us to read any of those further into the record, we can. And then finally, on the very back page, I have a copy of our six-year wastewater improvement plan, which shows in black the number of projects that remain unfunded. And so the finance director can respond to any specific financial questions regarding that, but I wanted to make sure that you saw what you approved last year and really where the funding shortfalls lie. So in summary, staff has reviewed all the comments and included in this packet is the response that should be entered into the record. If there are no questions of staff, we ask the mayor to close the public hearing.
Staff and others are still available for questions. The council can still ask questions.
627.
Council, you have the option to ask questions now. You can go into executive session to discuss any questions you have for me, given the potential. No, there's no chance. The public comment portion ended. Yeah, that should be marked as an exhibit number.
Okay, that would be Exhibit S.
That's the staff report is Exhibit S. No, we were clear that the public comment opportunity was at that public meeting, 4 weeks ago. Staff was going to have a response here, and that was going to be it. And the time for public testimony was at that earlier time. So, Council, you have the option to you can go into executive session with me if you'd like. Staff would not participate. You can ask questions now or after executive session, public and staff, or...
I think we should break for executive session at 6:28.
It's probably 15 minutes, Mr. Mayor, and action is anticipated. Yes. The potential litigation, threatened litigation. Okay. And bond counsel, you're welcome to come back. You're going to stay?
Yes.
When we come out of executive session, you'll transcribe the rest of this portion. Okay. So we're going to come out and discuss this in a little bit. I'll let you know. Yes, you needed to do all that. That was exactly what you needed to do. And then we're going to come out and have a discussion and a vote.